Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, April 14th, 2022. A year after the sudden suspension of MISD's Montessori program, newly established Wonder School Marfa aims to fill gap in local education system. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa parents sat in a circle in Marfa Public Library's community room last week to hear a presentation about a new alternative school coming to town, Wonder School Marfa, a mixed-aged micro school where, per the website, education is reimagined and curiosity is fostered through the cultivation of mind, body, and spirit. Administrators are aiming to open fall of 2022 with an enrollment goal of 10 to 20 students. The concept is that of a one-room schoolhouse with mixed-aged students from kindergarten to eighth grade. The location secured for the school is the ground level of the First United Methodist Church on Washington Street. The establishment of Wonder School Marfa comes after Marfa Independent School District suspended its Montessori programs for grades 1 through 3 and 4 through 6 at the beginning of the school year, with the district citing a continued decline in enrollment and only 6 students enrolled in each of the classes. At the time, some Montessori parents told the Big Bend Sentinel they had been turned away from the program, with the district citing classes were full. Superintendent Oscar Aguero refuted the claim. The only surviving class was pre-kindergarten through kindergarten, led by the Montessori teacher Emily Storiti, which consisted of 14 students at the start of the school year. The Montessori class will be suspended at the end of the school year, and Storiti will become an instructor at Wonder School Marfa. Aguero did not return a request for comment on why the only remaining Montessori program would be soon coming to an end. Storiti founded the nonprofit Marfa Montessori, which operated independently for a handful of years before folding into MISD in 2013. Because the program was a partnership between the school district and the pre-existing nonprofit, it was free for all students. The idea to bring Montessori into the school dates back to 2012, as then-Superintendent Andrew Peters sought creative ways to combat the district's historically declining enrollment. Now, after the program's decline, Storiti is looking to Wonder School Marfa to fill the space left by its absence. Flash forward a few years, and the school administration has shifted, and the goals of the school and my own goals have not remained quite the same, said Storiti at last week's first Wonder School Marfa meeting. So now I'm looking for a place where I can be my entire Montessori self, be supported, and help the people I love the most, which is the children. In a later phone interview, Storiti said Wonder School Marfa would like to expand to offering an early childhood program for 3 to 6-year-old children, but more time will be needed to meet legal requirements and certifications. My ultimate goal is for there to be another 3 to 6-year-old Montessori program in Marfa, because there's so many people who want it, said Storiti. Wonder School Marfa isn't the first alternative school to pop up in recent years. Another kindergarten through 8th grade school called Marfa International School operated from 2013 to 2016, but eventually folded due to financial issues. Storiti said she believes Wonder School Marfa will not meet the same fate, and ultimately will stay afloat because it is led by committed locals. We are people who are interested in investing in this town, said Storiti. Around 20 interested parents gathered for the introductory meeting, which was led by Wonder School Marfa director Crystal Cuevas. Kids shrieked and boisterously ran around in the neighboring courtyard, visible through large glass windows. There's our micro school right there, Cuevas laughed. Cuevas was joined by other Wonder School Marfa team members, Storiti and Sam Watts, who, along with Cuevas, will serve as the school's teachers or guides. The style of learning places the emphasis on student-led rather than traditional teacher-led inquiry. Watts taught at MISD for a number of years as an art, music, and after-school programming instructor before leaving the district in 2020. As a father of two, Watts said he was excited to be working with Wonder School Marfa, which will provide an alternative to homeschooling, a practice many parents in the meeting took up as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. This is something that is very important to me. It's very important to my kids who have had a very difficult time homeschooling, said Watts. Led by copies of informational packets donning the Wonder School logo and origami fox, Cuevas kicked off the meeting by saying she wanted to discuss the educational needs of the children in their community. Cuevas moved to Marfa a year ago with her husband and two children after routinely visiting Marfa for a number of years from their home base in San Antonio. She said her entrepreneurial spirit leads her to help find solutions to things that might be lacking in a community. With Wonder School Marfa, she aims to embrace the best parts of homeschooling, which their family engaged in during the pandemic, while offering kids more socialization. We felt isolated. I felt isolated. My daughter felt isolated. It was very hard for us, not only being new in a new town, not knowing a whole lot of people, but doing this homeschool curriculum all on our own, said Cuevas. I liked the freedom, though, and the flexibility of creating our own schedule every day, waking up a little bit later, going outside, and taking trips here and there on our own time. Meeting attendees reviewed a proposed weekly schedule for the students, which Cuevas said was preliminary in nature and subject to change. The curriculum will utilize online learning platform Prinda and involve daily routines of setting goals and project-based learning with an emphasis on gratitude, play, and discovery. Over 300 micro schools across the country employ Prinda's curriculum, which is designed to meet state education requirements, but Wonder School Marfa would be the first in Texas, said Cuevas. Prinda lessons are virtual. They are not interactive nor conducted with a live teacher, Cuevas said, responding to a parent's question about the format. Learning assessments will be conducted 3 times a year. The school will utilize diagnostic testing at the start to determine students' levels of understanding on a variety of academic subjects, said Cuevas. In order to meet each child's needs, Storiti said, day-to-day strategies might include pairing kids of different ages together or asking parents to work with their children additionally at home. I will follow each child wherever they need to go, so that will be incorporated into the environment each day, said Storiti. One parent asked about Spanish immersion, to which Cuevas said staff intended to incorporate language learning in a conversational way, playing or having snack time in Spanish. It is currently up in the air whether the school will adopt a 4 or 5 day learning week, but a 5 day model included field trip Fridays, where students will participate in nature, art, and community service activities around the Tri-County area. The idea is to take learning outside of the church space where we're going to be, said Cuevas. Watts said as a result of online learning during the pandemic, kids have been putting in a lot of screen time. He said Wonder School Marfa will incorporate academic lessons into real-life experiences, like introducing fractions through cooking. How can we make 30 or 45 minutes count on the computer, but then count even more afterwards by going out into the world and finding those concepts in the community and outside in nature, said Watts. What I've learned as a parent is that you really have to pad online learning with a lot of physicality. Watts shared his ideas for field trips, saying without all the district-level red tape, getting kids out and about would be easier to achieve and more frequent. He said he'd like for students to experience more artists, showing them messy art environments they may better relate to as kids. I think that the freedom to be able to invite guests and share the community with the kids at an early age is incredibly important, said Watts. There was a continued emphasis on instilling the importance of acts of service in Wonder School Marfa students. Kids could engage with Marfa's elderly population and perform trash cleanups around town, some suggested. Another key goal of Wonder School Marfa, outlined by Cuevas, was a desire to ensure parents are a key part of their children's education by becoming involved in student performances, field trips, and more. Parents will be required to contribute 20 hours annually of volunteer time toward helping with the school's fundraising efforts, community outreach, and facilities. Storiti said she would work with Wonder School Marfa's parent community to offer support and help establish clear communication between them and their children. She said she welcomed the opportunity to travel for her students and the school's attendance would be flexible, but there will be some form of attendance expectations. Tuition is currently set at $400 a month with a 20% discount for siblings. There is also a $200 registration fee and $200 enrollment deposit. The cost was determined considering a number of factors, including staff salaries, Prenda platform expenses, $100 a month per student, rent, utilities, Wi-Fi, insurance, class materials and supplies, and software. The school intends to host two annual galas and a regular booth at the Saturday Farmers Market to fundraise. Tuition assistance will eventually be offered, said Cuevas, once the school is eligible to apply for grant funding. Storiti said when she ran the nonprofit Marfa Montessori, it was challenging at first, with all students paying full tuition, but by their third year, 50% of the students had some or all tuition reduced. The more grants, the more funding that we can get, the more affordable we can make it, even for families that can't afford any tuition. Opening that up and bridging that gap in the community would be one of my personal missions, said parent Stella Fuentes. Staff photo by Maisie Crow. Firefighters with the Marfa Volunteer Fire Department worked to extinguish a fire at a Columbia Street home on Saturday morning. Cause of Columbia Street fire out of reach for now, says Marfa Fire Chief. By Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Early Saturday morning in the pre-dawn hours, neighbors to 401 East Columbia Street heard a woman screaming for help and ran to offer assistance, only to be met with a raging inferno that had all but decimated the home. By the time Marfa Volunteer Fire Department arrived, it was far too late to salvage the structure, said Fire Chief Gary Mitschke. When we got on the scene, it was already gone, he said. On Monday, firefighters were still putting out lingering hot spots under the rubble, and on Tuesday, they were still keeping an eye on the spots. The top floor of the two-story home had collapsed onto the ground floor, trapping those hot spots underneath. Though the flames had been largely subdued by 7 a.m. Saturday morning, within an hour and a half of the department's arrival, firefighters will likely continue to monitor the situation, said Mitschke, just to be certain it was completely extinguished. The fire seems to have started in the back, north-facing side of the house before spreading to the front, said Michiki. But as for what had sparked the fire in the first place, the fire chief offered little clarity. He said he was not optimistic about his department's ability to pinpoint the cause in a definitive fashion, given the extent of the damage and the volume of debris. I'll be perfectly honest, it's going to be very, very difficult to make a definitive determination, he said on Tuesday. The actual cause, I really don't think we're going to be able to determine that. But Michiki said he is still in the process of interviewing people for his report on the incident for the fire department. He has met with the homeowners, but wants to speak to a few eyewitness neighbors as well. He will likely wrap up his report next week, he said. The shocking incident is still fresh, having burned the quaint, tree-lined home near Neville Street, once belonging to the late artist Donald Judd, to a crisp just a few days prior. The trees in the yard are now singed black. What remains of the house itself is cordoned off with yellow tape. Cautioning onlookers to give the unstable structure a safe distance. At the time of the fire on Saturday, a family of three was inside the house. All three were safely evacuated before the fire department had even arrived, with the help of neighbors who jumped into the role of first responders around 5 a.m. I think it's a miracle they did get out alive, said Michiki. Retired Border Patrol agent Humberto Hernandez, who lives nearby, was the first to arrive on the scene Saturday morning. When he heard screams coming from the house, he looked out his window and saw the flames. When he sprang into action, he was just being a caring neighbor, he told the Big Bend Sentinel on the morning of the fire. He wasn't afraid for his own safety, he said. I was more concerned for the safety of everybody else. When he got to the house, he found a woman and a small child standing in the yard, having already escaped the blaze. He guided them to safety, then helped rescue a man who was still trapped on the top floor. At that point, Presidio County Sheriff Danny Dominguez had arrived on the scene with his son-in-law, having heard the screams from his nearby home. We heard screams, and I told my son-in-law it sounded like a lady screaming in distress, so we better go look, said Dominguez, the morning of the fire. Dominguez asked the woman if anyone else was still inside, and she said her husband was on the top floor. Dominguez and his son-in-law, along with Hernandez, grabbed a ladder and helped the man climb down from the window where he was gasping for air. The man was treated by emergency responders for smoke inhalation at the time, according to Marfa Police Chief Steve Marquez, but he was not transported to a hospital. Though Michiki said he believes his report will point to something general, not anything specific, he hopes to have more information on the fire in the coming days. There may be more definitive things in the future, he said. This is a developing story. The Sentinel will provide more information as it becomes available. Marfa City Council discusses power procurement, fire station expansion project, and other updates. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. A brief city council meeting this week started off with a presentation from program manager David Quinn of Public Power Pool, P3, who discussed the city's current contract and upcoming energy procurement process. All members, with the exception of Eddie Payarez, were present for the meeting. P3 is a nonprofit political subdivision corporation that brings together urban and rural counties and municipalities across the state to negotiate rates and contracts with retail electric providers, a process referred to as procurement. By unifying, it allows for smaller entities like the City of Marfa to receive cheaper rates. Lengths of contracts and rates vary depending on the energy market. The City of Marfa only recently joined the power pool and has so far saved a total of $17,027, said Quinn. Presidio, Brewster, and Jeff Davis counties are also members of P3. Quinn said he has been on the road visiting commissioners' courts and city council meetings across the state to discuss the current procurement cycle, and the program was going strong. No one's leaving. Everybody wants to stay together. With a group, you have more protection. You're going to get a better rate by working together, said Quinn. Quinn said P3 delayed their procurement process last year due to the volatility of the state's energy market in wake of the February 2021 winter storm. The city's current contract with P3 expires in December 2022. Council members reviewed copies of P3's procurement proposal for next year, and while they did not ultimately enter into any formal new agreements, they discussed whether or not they would be interested in opting into green energy with P3 for the next procurement cycle. Quinn said so far in this upcoming procurement process, Dallas County was the only other entity to express interest in 100% green energy through P3. Green energy is currently costing up to 10% more than conventional energy through P3, but renewable energy rates were competitive and only becoming more so, said Quinn. Council members Buck Johnston and Yosef Ben-Yehuda were in support of exploring the green energy option, with Ben-Yehuda stating it could give future council more options. Let's throw our hat in. Let's find out what the rates are, said Ben-Yehuda. It may also be a marketing opportunity, he said, and allow Marfa to be included as one of the few entities opting for green energy in addition to Dallas County. It's clear that this is the direction things are headed, said Ben-Yehuda. It's kind of who's doing it first. Council ultimately approved a motion, with Mayor Pro Tem Irma Salgado voting against, to begin the procurement process for 100% green energy through P3. By doing so, the council simply expressed an interest in purchasing green energy through P3, but did not commit to any particular rates or contract. Next, council briefly touched on whether or not the Marfa and Presidio County Museum Board was interested in establishing a long-term lease agreement in order to join in on the upcoming designation of downtown Marfa as a Central Historic District, which would make the museum eligible for franchise tax credits on restoration projects. Ben-Yehuda reported that board member Terry Norman had notified him the museum was not interested in entering into a lease. In a response to a request for comment, Norman said the board ultimately felt the agreement wasn't something that would work for their particular situation. Next up, Councilmember Ben-Yehuda and Fire Chief Gary Mitschke took the floor to discuss putting out requests for bids for Phase 1 of a long-discussed fire station expansion project, which would take place on the station's existing site. Utilizing city and county funds, the expansion, currently split into two phases, would prioritize adding climate-controlled space to store fire station trucks and equipment. Another goal of the Volunteer Fire Department, said Ben-Yehuda, is to ensure the building is multi-use and could be utilized to house the community in emergency or inclement weather situations, for example. Local architecture firm Mud Lab donated their time to draft up the architecture plans, said Ben-Yehuda. Many council members complimented the proposal. There is currently $175,000 secured for the project, said Ben-Yehuda. The first phase will focus on getting a simple building up, while phase two will focus on adding new bathrooms, a kitchen, and other amenities. We really tried to keep everything as economical as possible, said Ben-Yehuda. We know there's not a ton of funds. We want to see this project realized, so we're really trying to keep things as simple as possible. Last was City Manager Mandy Roan's report. Roan said EMS Director Bert Lagarde recently retrieved the service's loaner ambulance while the main ambulance in Houston undergoes a remount, which was funded by a grant from the state. Ron was also working on finding a training outlet the city could utilize to onboard new lifeguards for the Marfa Activity Center pool's upcoming summer season, but was finding it difficult to locate classes. She also said she was working with Insight Structures, the company chosen to perform engineering services for the Marfa and Presidio County Museum, to draft up an agreement. Pilot in Presidio plane crash faces federal human smuggling charges, granted conditional release, by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Pecos. Tobias Penner Peters, identified by authorities as the pilot of a plane that crashed just outside the Presidio Leli Airport on December 30th, made his second appearance in court on Tuesday before U.S. Magistrate Judge David Fannin. There were five undocumented immigrants from Mexico on board when Peters allegedly crashed, and he is believed to be part of a human smuggling operation. Fannin granted Peters conditional release. After processing, he will be allowed to wait out court proceedings from his home in Seminole. Around 4 p.m. on December 30th, an eyewitness watched the plane go down just beyond the landing strip at the Presidio Airport. Border Patrol and the Presidio County Sheriff's Office, PCSO, were dispatched to the scene, where they discovered two undocumented people who had been injured. One of the migrants' injuries were so grave she was life-flighted to a hospital to treat her inner injuries. Border Patrol agents later came upon three more migrants, one of whom reported that Peters had fled the scene and was bleeding profusely from his right eye area. A few days later, the PCSO and Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, conducted an interview with one of the undocumented people on board the plane, who was able to pick out Peters from a photo lineup. According to a criminal complaint, the migrant also said that they had seen him flee the scene with handheld radios, paperwork, a cell phone, and what appeared to be a firearm. That day, HSI investigator Coleman Boring filed an affidavit testifying that he had reason to believe Peters had violated federal human smuggling laws. Peters is accused of transportation of illegal aliens and transportation of illegal aliens causing serious bodily injury. The manhunt for Peters continued for months. He was finally arrested by the Presidio County Sheriff's Office at the Presidio International Bridge on March 25th. Bond was initially set at $188,000, and he was held at the Presidio County Jail. On April 4th, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Alpine filed a writ of habeas corpus requesting that Peters be surrendered and delivered to a U.S. Marshal. Peters' preliminary hearing was held on April 12th. U.S. Attorney Ashley Hoff filed a motion to detain Peters on the grounds that she believed a serious risk existed that the defendant will flee if released on bail, and that he posed a danger to the community. Fannin denied the motion, instead setting bond at $100,000 and setting conditions of release for Peters. Generally speaking, federal defendants released conditionally may not violate additional federal laws while awaiting sentencing and trial, and must respond to the court's request for DNA sampling and appearances in court. Additional conditions granted for Peters will restrict his travel to within Texas and New Mexico in order to settle pending legal matters. He will not be allowed to drink alcohol or travel to Mexico. Fannin ordered that Peters observe a curfew and will be restricted to his residence in Seminole. The order will take effect upon processing. As of press time, it was unclear whether Peters had been released. Peters has retained two lawyers, neither of whom responded for comment by press time. The U.S. Attorney's Office also did not respond for comment by press time.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, April 14, 2022. New subdivision to be built in the city. Nathan Heuer. The City of Fort Stockton City Council took an initial step to annex land outside of city limits for the purpose of providing utilities to a new housing subdivision in the near future. City Council approved the initiation of the voluntary annexation process for 20 acres of the Triple Crown Estates land, zoned property for a multiple family dwelling district for the purpose of obtaining utility services. The property is located between Greasewood and Sycamore near Fort Stockton Middle School. The annexation process could conclude within the next 60 days if there are no holdups. Annexation is a 60-day notice. The notice has to go out for the process. During the meantime, they set it up for planning and zoning. They review everything, and then it goes to council for the final approval. Planning and zoning will now complete their inspection by the end of the month, and two public hearings will be held as part of the requirements for the annexation process. Then it goes to planning and zoning, where they will really dig into the location, the site, the distance, schools, all of it. There's a lot that goes into it for consideration. If there are any objections to it, at that point, for whatever reason, it's pointed out to the person that's applying for annexation. They give them an opportunity to remedy and explain anything they have at that point. Fort Stockton City Manager went on to explain that if there are no holdups or objections during the process, the soonest the City Council could approve the annexation of the land is at their regular meeting on May 9th. If the annexation gets approved, Triple Crown Estates owners Andy Rivera and Belinda Rivera will then need to pay for separate taps for water, sewer, and gas from the city. Rodriguez added that there are current utilities already in the area that could be connected. What happens if everything gets approved on Monday night is they finalize it. Then they, the landowners, need to come pay for the tap. The materials get ordered and scheduled. Let's say the material takes 2 weeks. Schedule it for the third week. That's how it gets done. The landowner is responsible for the purchase and all the things that go with it. Everything is included in that tap fee. Andy Rivera said that he plans to build a 55-home subdivision that will begin with 6 houses being built this year and 10 more next year if the annexation is approved in a timely manner. Homes will be built by contractors that Andy Rivera has been in contact with to perform work this year. Individuals will also be able to buy a lot or lots and build homes that meet a minimum requirement that he plans to set up for the subdivision. Andy Rivera noted that the subdivision's minimum requirements for homes will be 2,000 square feet and above. They'll have to be 90% masonry and need to have private fence. It'll be affordable for the area and presentable for people that want to come to town and open up shop here. For people that say they want to work over here, but say Fort Stockton doesn't have something that is to their suit, I love to go out of town and I cruise the back roads and I see what they have that we don't. Then I ask myself, why don't we have this? Let's do it. Why not us? This is a developing story. Stay tuned for updates in future editions of the Pioneer. Public to vote on amendments. With the election less than a month away, many are asking for more details and a clear explanation of the two constitutional amendments that will be on the ballot. Senator Paul Bettencourt further explained the propositions that will be on the May 7th ballot across Texas. Early voting will begin April 25th. In the legislative special sessions of 2021, both propositions passed by unanimous votes. Below are some of the plain language talking points to answer many of the frequently asked questions. The Secretary of State has been sending calls to my office about propositions 1 and 2. Many voters have been finding the ballot language confusing, and I want to clarify what the amendments actually do. Homeowners over the age of 65 will see their freeze values for school taxes actually decline. Also, if passed, Proposition 2 will lower independent school district property tax bills by increasing the homestead exemption that will save money for the 5.5 million homesteads in the state of Texas. Proposition 1 would benefit individuals with an over 65 or disabled exemption on their homestead. They would receive a reduction on school district property taxes. HB 3 from the 86th legislature compressed school maintenance and operation tax rates across the board, except for over 65 and disabled, because their rate was already lower than the new rate for everyone else. This amendment would provide for the same percentage reduction in an individual school district tax rate that everyone else received in 2019. On average, these households would see a $110 reduction in the first year and a $125 reduction in the second. The reduction will continue to grow each year. Proposition 2 would increase the homestead exemption by $15,000 for school district taxable value purposes, from $25,000 to $40,000. On average, the 5.5 million homesteads in Texas would see a $175 savings in their school district tax bill at the current average statewide school property tax rate. If one or both of these amendments passes, no school districts would lose any revenue they are entitled to receive from the school funding formulas. State dollars will replace any local dollars a school district would otherwise lose from the passage of these amendments. Growing season underway at Belding Farms. Growing season began last month for the pecans at Belding Farm. The farm, located in Pecos County, produces an average of 5 million pounds of pecans a year on 2,200 acres of land. Belding Farms is currently installing a drip irrigation system on 96 acres of their land in an effort with Texas Water Trade to reduce water usage. The drip system is the first of its kind on the farm. The farm is currently using flood irrigation via concrete irrigation ditches that supply water throughout the farm. Pictured is the current flood irrigation system and the new drip irrigation system that is currently being installed. Trenches are being dug to bury the tubing. Also pictured is one of the most unique items on the farm, sound cannons that shoot sound waves up in the air to break apart hail before reaching the pecan trees. There are over 10 cannons in each location on the property. FSISD to host retired teacher job fair by Nathan Heuer. Retired educators looking to return to the classroom will soon have a unique opportunity to do so in Fort Stockton. The school district will host an educator job fair with in-person and virtual interview opportunities on Friday, April 29th, starting at 1 p.m. at the district's central office. As the superintendent, I believe that many retired educators still possess both the skill and desire to teach. Their years of experience and the wisdom they have to offer should be highly valued and respected, said Superintendent Zamora. The superintendent explained that the district decided to hold a job fair that is primarily for retired teachers because of the passing of Senate Bill 202 in 2021, a law that shifted the financial burden of the teacher retirement system surcharges to school districts and the need for talented educators. Like most school districts, FSISD is fighting hard to acquire top talent. Despite the challenges caused by the bill, the job fair is proof that not only will we consider retired educators as applicants, we will welcome them. Previously, retired rehires willingly shared the cost of surcharges with school districts to secure jobs and double-dip work salary and retirement payments. That's no longer the case. Districts will be inclined to shy away from retired educators. While most believe that the intent of Senate Bill 202 was benign, intent and residual effects are not synonymous. This bill may reduce opportunities for retirees to re-enter the profession as districts struggle to keep up with operating costs and inflation. Retired educators from Fort Stockton and surrounding towns are encouraged to attend in person. Virtual appointments can be scheduled for anyone who uploads their resume via the FISD's 1-Minute Quick Job app and is unable to attend in person. The superintendent added that the job fair is not exclusively for retired teachers, despite being primarily for that segment of educators. New and current teachers are welcome to attend the event. New and current teachers interested in positions are also welcome. Please scan the QR code with your smartphone camera or visit fisd.net for more info. Library to Get New Automation System by Megan Waring. Funded through a grant, the Fort Stockton Public Library will start using a new automation system. The Pecos County Commissioner's Court unanimously approved allowing the library to migrate to Book Systems, which is being paid by Tucker Foundation at no cost to the county until after the fifth subscription year. We don't have to pay until the sixth year, and when we get to that point, we are paying $795 annually. There will be no cost to the county, said Elva Valadez of the Fort Stockton Public Library. We applied to Talker, who has been generous, and they went ahead and accepted it. The data migration set up and switching information over to Book Systems will not occur until after the summer reading program in June and July. The migration will take a good 6 weeks, so we are thinking all of August and maybe part of September. The Talker Foundation promotes public libraries across the state that are located in communities of 12,000 or less. Grant applications are reviewed by a permanent committee of libraries appointed by the Texas Library Association. The Commissioner's Court also awarded CMC Recycling the bid for salvaging the steel girders from the old hospital located on Spring Drive in Precinct 2. CMC Recycling, located in Odessa, submitted a proposal for services for the removal of scrap material at no expense or payment to the county. Our execution strategy will incorporate heavy equipment, trucks, extremely qualified personnel, and a highly responsive approach to execute this project in a timely manner. At this time, CMC decided to offer its services at no cost or payment to the customer. In other words, they'll take it all off our hands, Joe Schuster said. Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, April 14, 2022. New subdivision to be built in the city. Nathan Hewer. The City of Fort Stockton City Council took an initial step to annex land outside of city limits for the purpose of providing utilities to a new housing subdivision in the near future. City Council approved the initiation of the voluntary annexation process for 20 acres of the Triple Crown Estates land, zoned property for a multiple family dwelling district for the purpose of obtaining utility services. The property is located between Greasewood and Sycamore near Fort Stockton Middle School. The annexation process could conclude within the next 60 days if there are no holdups. Annexation is a 60-day notice. The notice has to go out for the process. During the meantime, they set it up for planning and zoning. They review everything, and then it goes to council for the final approval. Planning and zoning will now complete their inspection by the end of the month, and two public hearings will be held as part of the requirements for the annexation process. Then it goes to planning and zoning, where they will really dig into the location, the site, the distance, schools, all of it. There's a lot that goes into it for consideration. If there are any objections to it, at that point, for whatever reason, it's pointed out to the person that's applying for annexation. They give them an opportunity to remedy and explain anything they have at that point. Fort Stockton's city manager went on to explain that if there are no holdups or objections during the process, the soonest the city council could approve the annexation of the land is at their regular meeting on May 9th. If the annexation gets approved, Triple Crown Estates owners Andy Rivera and Belinda Rivera will then need to pay for separate taps for water, sewer, and gas from the city. Rodriguez added that there are current utilities already in the area that could be connected. What happens if everything gets approved on Monday night is they finalize it. Then they, the landowners, need to come pay for the tap. The materials get ordered and scheduled. Let's say the material takes 2 weeks. Schedule it for the third week. That's how it gets done. The landowner is responsible for the purchase and all the things that go with it. Everything is included in that tap fee. Andy Rivera said that he plans to build a 55-home subdivision that will begin with 6 houses being built this year and 10 more next year. if the annexation is approved in a timely manner. Homes will be built by contractors that Andy Rivera has been in contact with to perform work this year. Individuals will also be able to buy a lot or lots and build homes that meet a minimum requirement that he plans to set up for the subdivision. Andy Rivera noted that the subdivision's minimum requirements for homes will be 2,000 square feet and above. They'll have to be 90% masonry and need to have private fence. It'll be affordable for the area and presentable for people that want to come to town and open up shop here. For people that say they want to work over here, but say Fort Stockton doesn't have something that is to their suit, I love to go out of town and I cruise the back roads and I see what they have that we don't. Then I ask myself, why don't we have this? Let's do it. Why not us? This is a developing story. Stay tuned for updates in future editions of The Pioneer.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, April 7th. Deputies nab 8 illegals Monday. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A traffic stop netted 8 illegal immigrants Monday at around 10:19 p.m. Ward County Sheriff Frerin Valle said the stop was made near the FM 1927 in Piute. Quote, a deputy was patrolling near the 63-mile marker eastbound on Interstate 20 when he attempted to stop a small white Pontiac van on a traffic violation, he said. The driver of the van refused to stop at first, but Valle said, quote, the driver did eventually exit at the 66 and pull over on the east shoulder of FM 1927, end quote. Quote, as soon as the vehicle stopped, the deputy observed the driver and 8 or 9 individuals flee the vehicle on foot, Valle added. The deputy gave chase and was able to apprehend one subject. Quote, shortly after, dispatch received a call from the Pilot truck stop in Piute in reference to several subjects located in the back of the store covered in grass and asking for water, he said. Deputies arrived and apprehended 5 more subjects. Quote, the K-9 was called in, and a perimeter was set up to search, but after an extensive search, we were unable to locate the driver, Valle said. Later in the night, 2 more individuals self-surrendered at the Pilot truck stop. No charges were filed, and all subjects were transported to the Ward County Jail to be detained and then turned over to the United States Border Patrol of Van Horn. Johnson arrested after choking and beating girlfriend. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. On Monday, April 4th, around 1:45 a.m., Ward County Sheriff's deputies responded to a call in the 900 block of North Eva Street in reference to an assault. When deputies arrived, they found a 21-year-old female victim with obvious injuries to her face. Quote, deputies made contact with the suspected assailant, Corey Wayne Johnson, age 18, of 903 North Eva Street, who told the deputy he and his girlfriend were arguing and he hit her in the face with his hands, Ward County Sheriff Frerin Valle said. Deputies noted it was unknown if Johnson struck the victim with a closed fist or open hand. Through the course of the investigation, deputies learned Johnson placed the female victim's head in a chokehold until she lost consciousness, Valle said. Johnson was subsequently booked and taken to the Ward County Jail on charges of assault, family violence, impeding breath, a third-degree felony. Justice of the Peace Elizabeth Polanco set Johnson's bail at $10,000. He posted the bond and was released later the same day. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 10 years or less than 2 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Drilling activity continues up. Oil, gasoline prices drop. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Drilling activity in the Permian Basin is up by about 8.5% since the end of 2021, while national activity is up about 14%. According to oilprice.com, oil prices for West Texas Intermediate crude was $101.40 per barrel on Tuesday morning, down from a high of $123.70 on March 8th. Price for West Texas Intermediate dropped below $100 per barrel on April 1st, but had rebounded slightly on Monday and Tuesday. Based on the April 1st data from Baker Hughes Corporation, there were 323 active rigs in the basin, up from 309 on February 25th. The basin activity is the highest since April 2020. The Texas side of the basin is up by 13, with a count of 230, with the New Mexico side tallying 93, up by 3. Nationally, that number has increased from 650 to 673. Ward County activity increased from 6 to 9 since February 25th, but is down from the 13 recorded at the end of 2021. Lee County, New Mexico, still has the largest count of active rigs in the basin with 53. Eddy County is reporting 39. Chavez County is reporting 1 active rig. Midland County remains at 31. Reeves County increased from 25 to 26, and Loving County increased to 25 from 17 recorded on February 25th. Crane County is down by 1 at 3, and Ector County remains at 3. Pecos County dropped from 10 to 8. Winkler County dropped from 8 to 7 operational rigs. Andrews County is up by 1 to 9 rigs. Overall, drilling activity is up by 60% in 1 year, a Monday report from Robert Rapier of oilprice.com noted. Rapier stated, quote, "One of the latest lines of attack in the finger-pointing over rising gasoline prices goes like this. U.S. oil companies are sitting on a huge number of permits, content to reap enormous profits while they refuse to drill for oil. This is mostly false, but with a kernel of truth that is never taken in context. So let's discuss what's really happening. The truth is that the number of rigs drilling for oil in the U.S. is steadily climbing. The year-over-year increase in the Baker Hughes North America rig count is now about 60%. In fact, historically, it has rarely climbed at a faster pace than this. Clearly, the notion that oil companies are just sitting on their hands, content to withhold production and squeeze American consumers, is false. Since drilling activity is steadily rising, what is the source of the claims that U.S. oil companies aren't drilling? I think there are two elements behind this misunderstanding. First, many don't understand the significant lag between drilling and oil production. The drilling count may have risen by 60% over the past year, but U.S. oil production is only up by about 8%. Thus, the conclusion is that U.S. oil companies are drilling. As the chart shows, they certainly are, but it takes time for that drilling to produce results. At the same time, depletion of existing wells is also a factor working against the attempts to increase production. The second element is one that has the kernel of truth. The rig count is steadily rising, but it is still significantly below the drilling levels prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. A 3-year look at drilling activity shows the dramatic impact of the pandemic, as well as the steady recovery since the rig count began to climb in the fall of 2020. End quote. Gasoline prices have dropped slightly over the past week, but still sharply higher than a month ago, AAA reported. On Tuesday morning, the national average for regular unleaded gasoline was $4.17 per gallon, down from $4.24 last week, but much higher than the $3.61 on March 1st. Average price in Texas on Monday was $3.79, up from $3.28 on March 1st, but was $3.87 last week. Area gasoline prices have also dropped from a week ago, but still higher than a month ago. Hector County increased from $3.26 on March 1st to $3.89. Pecos County went up from $3.36 to $4.10, and Reeves County went up from $3.55 to $4.18. Winkler County jumped from $3.63 to $4.09. Crane was at $3.99, up from $3.36 on March 1st. Ward County is in the middle, increasing from $3.45 to $4.09. However, all of these counties were down by a few cents over last week. Trustees approve early resignation of Harris, name replacement. A short special session of the Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD was held on Monday night to act on a replacement for business manager Sarah Harris and consider her early resignation. The trustees voted to change Harris's resignation to May 27th instead of June 30th. The trustees also voted to hire Katie Jones to replace Harris. Jones will begin on April 11th to work and train with Harris until her final day of May 27th. No action was taken on an agenda item to consider changing the date for the April 18th regular meeting of the trustees. The date will remain the same. Trustees present for the meeting were Bobby Almanza, Donna Garcia, Raymond Reyes, Joel Greiner, Nancy Upchurch, and Steve Fine. Trustee Quint Melius and Superintendent Chad Smith were not present.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.